Hello and welcome to another edition of the IMI Talking Leadership podcast. As we're getting closer to summer, hopefully, the topic of workplace wellness is something that's going to be coming up more and more. So today I've asked Ender Campbell to join me on the podcast. Following an early career working as a sports scientist with elite athletes on performance psychology and biomechanics, Ender then moved into workplace health promotion and academia, and he's now a strategic well-being consultant at Irish Life Wellbeing. And one of the things that Ender looks after is the app called My Life, which we'll discuss in a little bit of detail later. But for now, Ender, let me hand over to you and please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Thanks very much, Farah. As I said, I've been working with Irish Life now for around 5 years. We are a small company in a larger group called Irish Life Wellbeing. And what we do is we service a lot of the Irish Life clients. We help them design, implement, and evaluate their programs through ourselves and also through partners. So we look after kind of physical, mental health, and social well-being as well through a number of different programs. We really try to work in partnership as well, and help people understand what their problems are. And, you know, we learn a lot from some of our clients as well. Some of them are really kind of thought leaders in different areas, and they have a lot of international expertise as well. So it's really a nice kind of collaboration with them, and working on some really cool projects over the years.
And I think everyone by now has heard of workplace wellbeing, though I'm not sure everyone exactly understands exactly what it entails and why it's so important in today's professional landscape. So can you give us some insights into that?
Yes, and my family and friends still don't really know what I do, so there's nothing wrong with that. I think the term kind of wellbeing and wellness in the workplace has changed a lot over the last couple of years. Really kind of, you know, it would have started out and the basis would have been around health and safety and providing a safe place to work. And as that evolved over the years, it has actually included trying to have a better workplace experience and employee experience as well. More recently, it's around understanding some of the challenges that are there from a kind of personal perspective and a work perspective as well, and where those two really intersect. I think in the last couple of years, that divide between work and home life has obviously become quite blurred. So we have to look at people from a really holistic perspective. What that means is, like, if people are comfortable in their job, if they're happy in what they're doing, if they feel really fulfilled, if they've kind of got some opportunities to grow, if they've developed some skills and been able to demonstrate that in their work. So we really kind of look at not just kind of physical health and those traditional kind of interventions, but also mental health and some of the new skills that we're developing as well and have had to develop over the last couple of years.
And whether it's physical or mental health we're talking about, how do you see the relationship between workplace well-being and productivity of the employees? Can fostering a healthier work environment lead to improved performance all around?
Yeah, so in terms of productivity, it's obviously something that comes up quite a lot. And one of the advantages of some of the wellbeing programs is improving productivity. Generally, how that works and how that comes about is from reducing absence, reducing illness as well. So being kind of preventative in nature, spotting things early, having regular checks on kind of more your physical health, but also in your mental health as well, and understanding some of your stressors potentially and kind of upskilling in that area as well. So we know that the reason people become less productive, we'll say, is that they're maybe distracted with things that are going on in their personal lives, and anything that we can do to kind of help develop those skills in a work capacity can sometimes also benefit them in a personal capacity as well. So there's definitely there's lots of research in terms of productivity. It's quite complex, actually. But if we know that the interventions work and the programs work at actually achieving their aims, then we'll know that the longer term effect will be a more productive workforce, whether from lower sickness absence, but also helping people have more maybe clarity and more confidence in their job as well.
So productivity is definitely the angle that organizations come at it from. But then you get the individuals themselves. And I think some people can be quite afraid to advocate for their own well-being in the workplace because those sorts of discussions, especially around mental health as opposed to physical health, can be quite taboo or quite discouraged within the organization. So, how can employees make sure that they are advocating for themselves and their own well-being at work?
Well, it's important that employees tell employers and especially their line managers the things that they want to improve. They're not all mind readers, so that's really important. I think there's two kind of reasons why the conversations are avoided. Firstly, like if the especially in the line manager's position, they don't want to give out kind of wrong advice, or they feel that they could send somebody in the wrong direction. And so that's where, training in those types of conversations is really important. That's some of the work we've done recently, is around having difficult conversations and being very supportive, as opposed to accusatory. You're very much, supporting an individual to, seek the support that you can, make available to them. Also, in terms of there's a lot of media attention as well, and some of the programs, more recently that don't work, and employers still don't believe putting a workplace wellbeing program in place will make a difference. So I tend to agree on that. It's not just, putting in any old program, and we need to really ensure that we're addressing the areas that employees are finding challenging. And this kind of changes all the time as well because of the environment that we work in, the time of year, even the kind of the fluctuations in terms of the, say, stressors at work, for example. So really, it's a matter of giving that feedback, seeing what's available, the employer understanding that providing support will actually benefit them in the long term. And some of the of our team, are highly qualified in this area, kind of psychologists and behavior change specialists as well. They can really validate the solution that we're providing as well. So they can see some of the trends, and we can hopefully advocate for on behalf of the employees as well through some of our research and kind of coming to the employer saying this is really an issue and we have the solution hopefully to help you through that, even if they weren't really aware of it.
Thanks very much, Enda. I think one of the most severe outcomes of a lack of workplace well-being is burnout. And I've actually just read an article on LinkedIn today about how more millennials and Gen Zs are opting for this, what they're calling the softer life, because they feel so burnt out by the corporate rat race. So before it gets to that point, what are some signs of burnout, and how can employers and line managers especially address it and prevent it in their staff members?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting area. A lot of clients have asked me around this as well, and kind of how to put in place some strategies to reduce burnout. It's a book I've actually recently read myself last year around burnout and especially millennials due to the kind of some of the environmental factors that they're having and some of the stressors. I suppose I won't go into the specific detail around that, and we run sessions on that can go into a lot of detail. Some of the kind of high level symptoms you don't necessarily understand or realize it's happening until it's kind of too late. There's things like stability, which can be really difficult to find in maybe more precarious work, but also in the work environment that we're in over the last couple of years. We really feel that we need to work quite hard, and we don't know kind of what's going to happen in the next while, over the next kind of couple of months or years, and we really want to consolidate the position that we're in. So you don't want to leave any room for error, and you don't tend to do that. So what happens is if something unexpected happens, if you become ill or so your personal circumstances or things like that change, it means that you're over the edge of kind of high productivity, and you start to kind of spiral in a way that's really difficult to kind of unwind. So if you're in a kind of precarious position or you're taking on things that are maybe less sustainable, that would be an indication that it could be difficult in future. It's also a case that, the rise in technology and we have more challenges to overcome than we previously did. These are kind of skills that we need to learn, around multiple notifications and multiple screens even, and channels of communication. That's something that we didn't previously have, and it takes a lot more of a toll on our brains, basically. So for many of us, kind of this hybrid way of working and stuff, it means that there's an increased chance of burnout, and we really have to understand our own responses to it. What are the types of things where, what are the things that really help us reduce that likelihood? And there's a mixture of responsibility on the individual, but also on the employer, to understand where the resources are, where the supports are, and understand from maybe previous cases where they can step in before it's kind of too late.
As a leader in a business, whether that is all the way at the top, the CEO, the managing director, or a line manager or a team lead, what kind of role do those people have in championing workplace well-being? Is it something that leaders can get involved in, or is it more a function that needs to sit with a dedicated team or an HR team or an outsourced team?
Well, definitely, like some of the research we've found in the past is that the line manager is so important in your work, actually more influential than maybe your doctor or your family in terms of your overall health outcomes, which is kind of scary. The amount of time, obviously, and influence that a line manager has is massive. So that's why it's important that managers can play a role in that. They can understand what their challenges are for their team, and they can empathize, and therefore they can kind of advocate to maybe senior management or dedicated teams, as you said, to kind of use those interventions and direct some firstly funding, but also direct some attention from those who are providing some of the services. I would say that there's definitely an importance to understand what the challenges of their specific team is, and also kind of pushing for that as much as they are equipped, because ultimately they have to achieve a goal, or they might have challenges that they have to overcome. And thinking long term, if they can support their team to do that and achieve those goals, that's really, self-serving in a positive way, and actually make sure that everybody is happy.
Thanks very much, Enda. I think that mental health is really important from a workplace well-being perspective, but I don't think we should lose sight of how important physical health is and physical fitness is to our well-being in general. So why do you think it's important for employers to promote physical activity amongst their employees?
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's not as topical at the moment, but it's always running in the background. We've kind of done some research, and we do some every year, and we kind of track some of the trends and the changes in our behaviors. And we work with Professor Niall Moyna in DCU, and he advises us on some of the trends in the area. And the unfortunate thing is that the news isn't necessarily very good in that area. We feel that we're a little bit healthier than we are, but actually, activity has been engineered out of our life as well. So the he would always say, Niall Moyna would always say, that the that exercise is the greatest medicine. And as a former or reformed sports scientist, I would also obviously agree with that. It's the benefits. I think we are all aware of the benefits of that. In terms of actual, there's lots of interesting studies around reducing sick days and absence over a whole organization. But also the types of activities where you can have more motivation, better problem solving, more loyalty to the organization, kind of cohesion, those types of things. Obviously for Irish life as well, there's a vested interest in supporting people to be healthier as well. So I think it's trying to find those opportunities to kind of look at sustainable behavior change, and in order to actually help people to kind of really build on their activity levels and keep it sustainable over longer term. So when you think about some of the ways where we have successful behavior change or maintaining healthy behaviors, there's a couple of main factors in there. First one is around motivation. So as we know, motivation can really change from different time of the day, and the weather is bad outside, or if you're too busy, whatever. So motivation is kind of a fragile thing, but it's important that we kind of support that through different channels and consistently motivating others as well. So motivation is one thing. Also, your ability. So, do you actually have the physical capability, but also do you have time in your day? Do you have the capacity to engage in that activity? And finally, is there some sort of trigger? So for us, kind of triggers could be a notification on our MyLife app, or it could be the fact that, you're starting a challenge, or that your, a colleague of yours, says they're going to go for a walk at lunchtime. They're simple triggers that really help you do the activity or the sustain that behavior that you want to do. So always looking for those opportunities, looking to motivate others, and team-based challenges and those types of things are really important in order to do that.
Thanks very much, Enda. I think in the world that we live in now in 2024, there will always be a role for technology to play in everything we do, and that includes physical fitness. So I believe that there is a MyLife app which can help organizations with some of these issues, and there's a challenge beginning shortly. So can you tell us a bit about that and how our member companies can get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. The technology can be seen as a really positive thing. There's so much coming out there at the moment in terms of, for your exercise levels, your nutrition, the social interactions as well. MyLife is an app that we've been running for around 5 years now. I think the MyLife team won't like me for giving it a wrong number, but it's around 160,000 people in Ireland that are using it. It is free to download as well. And what we're doing is, this is our fifth year of the annual Workplace Fitness Challenge. Again, for IMI members, you don't have to be an Irish Life customer to actually take part in the challenge, put in a team. And basically, it's launching on Workplace Wellbeing Day, which is the end of the month, the 26th of April. So it's a couple of weeks to get involved and sign up. Really, all it is a team-based activity challenge. There's leaderboards, there's prizes as well, some lovely prizes for the individuals. I believe some lovely hotel vouchers, but also for the companies as well. So some free interventions and programs that we can offer for companies, and actually promote and discuss some of the programs we have available. So that's happening at the end of the month for 3 weeks. And what we've seen is over the last couple of years, over that period of time even, that the health score has improved. So the central tenet of the MyLife app is to simplify a number of things that can impact your overall health and well-being. This one algorithm which creates a single health score is actually a really easy way of doing that. And what we've seen is over that period of time that the health score improves in a really significant way. And those significant changes are the types of things that we're looking out for. It's really easy for a company to make those changes, and the obviously the long-term benefits for an individual are fantastic as well.
Thanks very much, Enda. So that challenge is free to get involved with. So I would encourage everyone to do that and comment on our LinkedIn. Let us know the results. Let us know how you're getting on. I will leave a link to that in the description for this podcast. And I just want to thank you, Enda, for coming on the IMI Talking Leadership podcast today. And thank you to everyone for listening. You can subscribe on SoundCloud or on your preferred podcast provider to ensure that you don't miss an episode. Until next time.